I'm matriculated, so, and I've had the opportunity to actually implement, to the students some of the Treasury information and the education that Treasury provides through their platform. So that's been amazing. I know the topic of the conversation here is AI and the way that we can integrate it into healthcare and into blockchain. So, in my opinion, I think there's infinite space right now, for integration and to build partnerships between healthcare and blockchain, just because there's so little that's already been built, especially when talking about the XRP ledger. There's still just so much opportunity there. I don't want to be too long-winded, Hales, but just some of the advantages that can be found when integrating blockchain technology into healthcare, patient. So there's really two sides when talking about healthcare. So you have the patient care aspect of it, and you also have the billing and reimbursement aspect of it. So as far as patient care, with blockchain, you do have the ability to create private ledgers. So, which is very important in healthcare, because one of the main objectives is to protect patient information and to keep patients as safe as possible. So, being able to access medical records and medical information on a ledger that's not necessarily visible or viewable to the widespread community is definitely a plus. It would make blockchain and AI integration a lot, more feasible because the option there. Integration with EMR and EHRs, which are the electronic medical records and electronic health records, using APIs, which are basically application programming interfaces that, create contracts between multiple applications. So, being able to integrate the blockchain into the electronic health and medical records, allows for the information to be input into the record and for patients to be able to possibly access that information and interact with that information along with their providers through, portals such as, I know some of you may be familiar with MyChart, which is basically a patient portal. That works alongside Epic, okay, which is a pretty, at least here in Houston, where I'm located, it's a pretty well-known electronic medical record. So being able to have those APIs and have the ability to, connect the applications, in my opinion, would create, a lot more ease of use and the ability for patients to be able to interact with programs that they're already familiar with. So, most patients are already pretty familiar with logging on to MyChart, or there are other portals out there, but logging on to these electronic applications so that they can access medical records, request prescriptions, so forth and so on.
So I'm going to add something. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me here. My name is Gianluca Di Novi. I also work for a hospital. I'm director of a medical device and simulation lab at the Mass General Hospital, and I am a faculty at the Harvard Medical School and founder of a blockchain layer one protocol. So the integration of AI and blockchain into healthcare, it's a kind of a complicated, it's a very complicated matter, because in this moment, there are a number of things that need to be taken in consideration. The first thing is compliance and regulation. So there's no way on public or on private blockchains that the patient data is going to go on the ledger. There's no way, not in US, not in Europe. So what instead the blockchain can do is posting or storing signature of the record, of the patient record or any other kind of documentation coming from the healthcare system. And what is the advantage of that? I explain you that very, very quickly. So imagine you are a patient and you go in a hospital and instead of doing what they were supposed to do, there is a malpractice case and I don't know, they cause you a problem, another health problem. So what happened is that while there is like a malpractice insurance, which is going to eventually cover you financially to pay you for the damage you got, there is nothing that will pay the hospital for the loss in reputation. Because if they do something wrong, at that point, there is a loss in terms of reputation. So even if there is a malpractice insurance, let's say that there is, a very good motivation for some of the healthcare providers in trying to hide malpractice cases. And it is very often happened is that very clamorous cases of people that have been, you know, reporting very big damages cannot recover any legal expenses or any damages. And this is because the institutions own the record and they own the log on the record, which means that they can go after there is an error, they can go to modify the data to try to make things look much better and like there is no real liability from their end. So they can make statements that or things you said or things like this. So instead, there is the possibility using a zero-knowledge proof to sign that medical record and to store only the signature in the blockchain. So you are not, in matter of fact, you're not sharing the medical record. So the data stays in the hospital, but there is only a signature. Now, if you go and you modify that medical record without updating that signature is not going to be valid anymore. So in other words, what happened is that if they use this system with signatures, whenever they make a change, that is tracked. So they cannot go back, change the data after the damage has been done. And that's one of the first applications of the blockchain in the healthcare system. The second, if you think about, is very similar. And it is, for example, for pharmaceutical industry. Now, there was COVID. They released the vaccines. And after the release of the vaccines, people started dying. So there is obviously a liability from the pharmaceutical industry. And the problem is that when people start dying, the first thing that they will do is go and modify all the clinical trials data and try to make the data look very favorable for them so that, you know, they didn't have any liability. Everything comes in within the statistics. Everything is normal. And because they have the time and they have the way to change that data because it's in their hands. But if that data is signed, using zero-knowledge proof and the signature is stored in the blockchain, then you cannot go back and change the data just to make things better for you. At that point, it will be fully exposed to the liabilities of their actions. And if you apply these, especially in poorer countries, where there is a very weak healthcare system, which today are used pretty much as a testing ground for drugs and vaccines, I know it sounds terrible, but that's the way it is. Having a technology like this in place becomes very important. But now you know, you want to say, who is going to ask for this technology to be in place? I mean, how can you change the system? Well, likely there are a couple of possibilities. So while we are waiting for the regulation, you know, to be applied now that the technology is available, there is another possibility that is through the insurance, because the one that usually pays is the insurance. So the insurance want to know what they pay for. And they are the first ones that are very big fan of this kind of technologies. And we designed a circular protocol as a layer one blockchain specifically designed for this kind of applications. We can do many other things, but the most important thing that we do is having an architecture that is already compliant by design, with HIPAA, with GDPR, so designed for the healthcare industry. Now there is the story of the AI, though. how do I integrate AI into the loop? Well, in the healthcare industry, the AI came to play in many different ways. First of all, obviously, in the data analysis, in way that for diagnosing conditions that perhaps are not so evident, simply because one of the very good aspects of the AI is that can keep track or memory of everything. And that memory is always there available, which is a very powerful mechanism. But if you want to go back to the blockchain, how can you combine AI and the blockchain together to support healthcare? Well, the first thing to say is that today, there's no real technology to leverage the AI in the Web3 industry on layer one blockchains. I think we are one of the few companies that are proposing models for decentralized computing. This is a new narrative in the Web3 industry, which does the following thing. When you take the patient data and you process this data, the patient is still, in the hands of the institution that owns the data and owns the process. Because how do you know that that institution has processed the data in the right way? And they can come up with the idea to apply certain kind of medications rather than another. How can you do that? It's in their hands. They decide all the values. How can you go back and see if that was right? The way you do is through the decentralized processing. So I take the process out of the institution and I put that process in a smart contract. So that smart contract now is capable of taking the data, creating a session on a GPU cluster, for example, so you can have the processing which can involve the AI. But that computation is happening in parallel on multiple machines controlled by completely independent nodes that they don't know each other. So you essentially have the same computation happening in parallel on multiple places around the world from multiple nodes. And in matter of fact, when you see the result of that computation, you see that the result has to be the same for all the different instances. So you say, okay, you said that applying this algorithm to this data, the final result is going to be A, B, and C. If that is true, it's going to be A, B, and C in all the different instances of that process. So this is the decentralized computation. Right now, this is done at application layer. So in the application layer, you have the AI that is doing all the processing, is extracting precious information, but you have no idea if that AI is biased, if the process is certified, et cetera, et cetera. What we are doing, for example, at Circular, we are bringing that decentralized computation inside the blockchain network. So then now it's not even in the application level. It is in the blockchain. You can see the code. You can see the algorithm that does the processing. So the entire process is certified, not only the result. And this is like if you want the natural extension of the smart contracts, which are just at the very beginning of the decentralized computation. Any thought about this?
Hi, Gianluca. Can you all hear me? I don't know if Gianluca is rugging, but I'm extremely interested in what you're saying. First of all, thank you to Ms. Hales for bringing me up. Ellis, brother, I'm so happy and proud to see you up here speaking your piece. Gianluca, my name's David. I represent my company, Ledger Integrations, and I'm building a document signing platform on the XRP Ledger. And I had originally requested the microphone from Ms. Hales to sort of speak to what you were just speaking about. And very eloquently, as you went along, you mentioned a lot of the things that I'm finding, because one of our primary verticals will be the medical industry. And as again, you so eloquently stated, there are so many problems that we can solve. And I have to be careful with what I say, because a lot of it's not ready to be out yet. And I don't, it's almost going to turn into like a networking shill now that you've covered everything. But I'm very, very glad that you mentioned zero knowledge proofs as part of your stack. It's something that's become very important to what we're building along with decentralized identity. And then you went on to mention the smart contracts and their use cases. And I see very, very strong use cases for both medical records and for the allocation and approval of prescriptions and prescription management. There are some very, very deep things that can be done on blockchain without the AI component. But when you add and leverage that, it makes this technology much, much more powerful. So one thing that you started to touch on is how compliance and GDPR and HIPAA are so important, which is exactly what we've run into, as you would expect, building what we are. One resolution, without saying too much, is that on the network transactions that are on Ledger, you can actually use metadata to call and recall information that's in a private database, and that's one link that you have to access and contain that data. Another thing that you mentioned that I find vitally important, that is a problem that you solve, that it will potentially be solved here, is the transferring of medical records. You live in an area, you go to one hospital system, and then you move, say, to another state or another country, and you have to start all over again. And the only fragmentation is that line of chain of custody. And what you're doing, combined with what we're doing and some other entities in the space, will solve that problem, and it'll make it much easier for people, especially non-tech users, to have that those transferring of records. And what happens is, the younger people, they don't mind filling out the paperwork or doing the computer work. But as us Gen Xers and the boomers are growing older and don't want to really participate in some of the technologies, we need to make the technologies work for us. So again, I got so excited when I first heard you speak, Gianluca. I really love what you're doing. I would love to have an offline conversation with you, maybe exchange some information and see if what we're doing together can't help this. And again, it's really not about our products or projects, but it's about the ability to address these issues and solve them for people that need these problems to be solved. So again, Alice, super proud of you for being up here.
Hey,
Gianluca, I
thanks,
would,
David.
yeah, I just I see you up here. I'm so happy. For those that don't know, I don't know how much was covered. Alice and I are XRPL campus ambassadors, so we're both in an education environment as well as a building environment. I paired Alice with Treasury because it seemed like a natural pairing. I'm so proud of both of
Thank
you.
you so
I
much.
really have a lot of love. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And with that, I'm going to stand down. I'm really curious to see what else Gianluca has to speak. Treasury, as always, you are bringing the heat with your guests. I'm really proud of you guys as well.
Just to kind of piggyback really quickly off of what David was saying to you, Gianluca. Nice to meet you, Gianluca.
Nice.
One of the things that you said that really resonated with me is the issue with medical malpractice and the issue with tampering with charts in order to change the narrative, of what the medical malpractice suit may be targeting. And so instead of everything being on a ledger, like you spoke before, actually having that signature verification on the ledger that, to me, it almost sounds like a timestamp, that says, hey, this is what was done at this point in time. Anything that's tampered with afterwards, can be it'll show that, things were done afterwards and, the information that was entered later, maybe should be looked at a little bit more closely. So, I know that medical malpractice is a huge deal in the field right now. So I think that's a great idea and, something that I'd like to watch, as you continue to build out.
Well, there is more, guys. First of all, thank you for your kind words. So, I mean, that is just the tip of the iceberg. That's very really the most obvious kind of application. But I can mention many more. Like, for example, proof of provenance. One of the main difficulties in the pharmaceutical industry, in the research in general, and I tell you this because I am a researcher, so I've been touched from all these things, and I'm also a victim of a malpractice case. You know, when I was a kid, I had an injury, and the hospital tried to hide everything. But anyway, proof of provenance. So what happened is that very often all these pharmaceutical companies, they need to mine data. So they need to have a lot of data and try to extract information to support their thesis or their development for drugs. The problem is that some of the companies that provide the data mix real data with fake data. And that is a very big issue because right now there is no there was no way to demonstrate that the data was really coming from a patient, because that is the ultimate NFT, you know. The data of a single person is like the most precious NFT you can buy. So now there is the possibility also to guarantee when the data was generated, where the data was generated, from who was generated. So, and it doesn't have to be like an anagraphic information, of course, but you can guarantee the quality of the data you are using for your studies. This is a very important, this is a really big deal, because like now you know that eventually your research is going to be based on real data. And it doesn't matter where you buy, if it comes through a certified process, everybody's going to benefit from that. And we are building these. I mean, our layer one is completely built. We miss literally a few minor features, but the majority of the work is being done. And we got investors all coming from the healthcare space, which is obviously was a very important milestone to, you know, to consecrate our layer one as a layer one designed for those kind of applications. We are, you know, signing very important partnerships. And but what is important was to win the bet that the demon of the technology, the blockchain, was something extremely valuable. And today it is very important through events like these or other kind of opportunities to educate, because despite, you know, we also have a cryptocurrency, we're going to be listing, we're going to be doing these things. Blockchain and crypto are two different things. That is only one use case. And I have companies that are literally creating infrastructures to sell patient data, but paying back the patient. But now the patient has the possibility to know how, when, and how many times their data was sold, because it's not that they sell the data once, the record. Aside that their record keep growing, especially for people that have a longer history in the healthcare, from the healthcare side. But if they sell the data 10 times, the patient needs to be rewarded 10 times, need to be paid. And it doesn't matter how you want to pay them. It can be with a cryptocurrency, with cash, with coupons for products, you know, for medications, for things, especially if they are ill people, that will be very appreciated. But, you know, if you really want to embrace the Web3 philosophy, even in the healthcare, and I think there is a very big need for that, we are building all the tools to support that industry. And I know that there are a lot of very cool narratives, guys, about gaming and NFTs and all the other things, but healthcare is for all of us. Doesn't matter where you're born, what's your belief, your race, your culture, you need healthcare. It is a very big and important industry. So I think, and I bet on people to understand the importance of what we are trying to accomplish. And, you know, I welcome anyone to have any private conversation with me if there are opportunities to contribute, not necessarily to bring or to share or to learn or even to critic and tell, hey, guys, you are getting this wrong. We are open to everything. I mean, the name we picked, Circular, is essentially expressing who we are. No corners, no sides, very humble people, working very hard to try to do something good for everybody. Maybe I made someone sleep today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you all so much. Sorry for my tardiness. I got caught up with my son at his school. I apologize. But when it comes to patients and their data being sold, I really believe that it's unfortunate. A lot of time that the patients whose data is sold the most are the ones that are underserved. And a lot of them could benefit from some type of stipend or reward for their information, especially patients with end-stage renal disease, dialysis patients, heart failure patients. These patients are already disenfranchised in so many ways. So some type of reward for that data. And I really believe that that's one of the real use cases of blockchain and AI in this space. And thank you all again for having me. Yes, thank you. I really feel like the opportunity to close the gaps in the healthcare space and level the playing field for everyone, to give everyone a chance to benefit from top-notch research, from all like clinical trials. I'm not sure if you all have mentioned that, but clinical trials is one area that I also think the disenfranchised could really benefit from. A lot of people are participating in research studies without even knowing. Drugs and different medical devices are being developed based on their data. They have no knowledge of this. So I'm just grateful that this technology is emerging, that it exists, and I really believe that it will close the gap for many in the healthcare space. I'll just speak about an experience I encountered over the weekend at work. I was taking care of a 25-year-old immigrant from another country here for many years, but not really able to receive health care because he is not a citizen. So he was afraid to come to the hospital. In the end, it was a young man with testicular cancer. But by the time he showed up in the ER with vomiting and nausea, his testicular cancer had metastasized all through his liver, all through his abdomen. It was the toughest thing for me over the weekend because he was so sick and he was so young. And I kept asking him, you know, you haven't seen any healthcare professional throughout this time. And he would say, yeah, but you know, I didn't even mention anything there. You know, if I went to urgent care, it was just for a broken arm or whatever. But I believe that there's a real area when it comes to cancer diagnosis, as far as AI is concerned. I feel like if there's a real opportunity there that globally could be spread and these diagnoses could be made earlier. So people like him don't have to end up in the situation that he was in, because that was really heartbreaking. And I couldn't believe that all this time, you know, he had gone undiagnosed for so long. So that's one use case that I think really, really is going to benefit the world in the use case of cancer diagnosis.
Well, there are, again, like I said, there are really a lot of different applications in the healthcare space. Another very typical, also affecting the pharmaceutical companies, is the traceability of drugs. So maybe, I don't know where you're from, but in several countries, one of the issues is that, believe it or not, there are clones of drugs. Clones, which are, in matter of fact, you know, placebo medications, but they are sold as real medications, and there are now there are many companies trying to put in place systems to be able to trace their drugs, so that the user can eventually just take a cell phone, and when he's in a pharmacy or in any store when he's trying to purchase medications, can track and see if that medication is actually a real medication coming from that company, because there is a record that has been saved. Anyway, today I don't want to monopolize, you know, the time here, but I had probably tried to stimulate the conversation. There is, you know, a lot of need for new ideas, for new use cases, for new challenges. And today we are really living a magical moment, which is the convergence of several technologies that are, in matter of fact, allowing a lot of important changes. So we have the AI, but the AI is a child of what? The AI is child of two things: the GPU computing and the big data. So we have the possibility to have all these beautiful technologies because we really are in a magical moment from, you know, the technological perspective. All these technologies are converging and they can really create new applications, a new smarter way to live. And at that point, I think it is nothing but fair to try to give back more control to people, you know, because again, we're losing from one end, a possibility to do certain type of jobs, because think about, I mean, you today start your degree in college, trying to do a job, and then from now to the next 10 years, because now the time frame becomes smaller and smaller, you find out that the AI can do that job better than you, and you know that job is not going to be what you're going to do. And you were growing, you were dreaming about that, so giving back a bit of control to people in the way to distinguish what is real, what is not, what is artificial, what is human, it is important. The AI, it is not less dangerous than a weapon. You can use it to defend yourself, or you can use it to kill someone. And one of the biggest, challenges that we will have to face in every industry, not only healthcare, is really making sure that we can distinguish what is coming from AI and what is coming from human being, for many reasons. One reason is for the liability, another is for the merit of whose generating the data. So it is very important today to start understanding what the protocols, what the workflows to combine all these different technologies are, to try to take advantage of them in the most effective way to bring more value to people. And regarding the story of paying people, you know, for their data, I think that that's where we are going, and that's where we should be going. And like I said, the ultimate NFT is your data. So if you are losing from one side, you need to gain from another side. So and that is going to just help us generating better data, cleaner data, and have even a way to rate the data that a patient, a human being is generating, is leaving a track, but can be the first one to benefit from the data. And believe me, the majority of people that have in the healthcare industry, they really need to have some sort of reward. There are many people that they cannot even pay for their medications. And so at least you give them another opportunity to be able to cover those costs. And so, you know, make the world a better place while we are also addressing some issues here and there. And I will add, be careful, because your medication, your visit to the doctor in your case, not free, is coming out of your taxes. And that's it's a totally other issue that is also related to healthcare. Someone is charging your government for those expenses. And again, even there, you need a way to make sure that those expenses are being done in the proper way. Because I come, you know, I'm Italian. I live in US, but I'm Italian. And in Italy, we have a very similar system. But very often, you know, prescriptions or visits are really managed in a horrible way, which is really like, I would say, borderline illegal for what you're doing to your government, to your country. Prescribing stuff that is not really needed, or prescribing to a person something that in reality is for their neighbor or someone else. So again, today there are a lot of old problems that can be addressed because there is the right technology. And again, it is very important to have these conversations, to start seeding into the head of young entrepreneurs or you know, visionary people, potential applications that can be built to address all of them. We cannot change, I mean, what our life was, but, you know, we need to invest in the new generations and try to make a better world for them as well. And that is important from our end. Education, mentoring, giving the opportunity and start building the right tools for them to benefit from.
Yes, recently, a friend of mine told me that one day in the hospital costs $2,500. And she said, if people knew that, I'm sure they wouldn't mind spending an extra $25 here and there on the right fruits and vegetables or the right health visits, preventative health care visits. So that's something to really think about. I think that the focus should shift to wellness. And that's one of the things that we're doing with Nurse Block is providing these wellness services with the ability for people to pay with crypto if they don't have insurance. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about when you said if you think that AI could replace humans. I'm not sure if you all have spoken already about NVIDIA's merger with Hippocratic AI to create AI nurses. It was all the buzz a few weeks ago because they're saying that these AI nurses can replace real nurses at a cost of $9 an hour. And as a nurse myself and knowing all of the things that I've been a nurse 18 years, so there are certain things that I don't think AI will ever be able to replace experience-wise, but I do think certain patterns and behaviors can be identified and point to a problem earlier rather than later. So I just wanted to know how others felt about AI nurses and would they be willing to would they want to receive care from an AI nurse? I've been very, very interested ever since I read that article.
Oh, I hope it's my turn. I'm sorry, Ms. Hales, but I'm just so inspired by the passion and empathy. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name, but NFT nurse. May I know your name, please?
Sharonda.
Miss Sharonda, it's people like you that AI will never be able to replace. And if I were in a situation where I needed some care, you just based on a few words you've spoken, you would be at the top of my list. I come from a family. My aunt has been a nurse and a midwife. Cousins are in the medical practice. And I really, the thing that AI cannot do that we need when we're patients is that empathetic quality. AI is a tool, it's not a replacement. So what we do need are people who are properly trained to be able to administer the tool and use it, but that human touch and that empathetic quality and that ear to listen when somebody is in pain or not feeling well, and then the connection that we have is something that cannot be displaced from this environment, because what you will have from that, and I firmly believe, is that you will have less healthy patients. You'll have a decline in the quality of healthcare. You'll have more knowledge, or you'll have a certain amount of knowledge that you'll come into. But if that knowledge isn't administered correctly, it becomes pointless. And there's a use case. I'm in the tech hub of the world, Montana. And in a couple of restaurants over here, we've actually implemented robotic waitresses. And that's another thing where that human connection comes into play in a different level. But what we find, what I'm seeing secondhand, is the over-deployment of this asset is actually creating more work, more frustration, and it's not accomplishing the job that needs to be done. So I just want to give you some support, Ms. Sharonda. I really appreciate what it is that you do, and I do know for a fact that you cannot be replaced by AI, and that compassion, that empathetic, and that human touch that are so important. So you go. I am really inspired by your words.
That meant so much to me. Thank you.
Well, so yes, the short answer is yes. There is more to add. So I know I don't want to break any heart, but for example, there have been studies about diagnosis and user experience, patient experience. And it's funny because the comparison was won by the AI, not from the people. And obviously that was a blinded, double blind test. And essentially, the AI has demonstrated more empathy than real people. Obviously, that was just the impression of the patient. Yes, so the answer is yes. And even in terms of quality of the diagnosis was much better. I am part of the radiology department at Mass General Brigham. And I can already tell you that the AI can diagnose from any imaging data set much better than human beings. And so, yes, that will become a way to be able to get better medical assistance through the AI. Unfortunately, the only problem that we have right now is that the current AI is running on very heavy equipment. So it's not on your phone. Your phone is connected to a cluster of GPUs somewhere, and that is a very heavy equipment. But for example, the Department of Defense is investing to try to give soldiers pretty much a device that could work as a physician, so that they have their own doctor to be able to take care of themselves and have like a kit that they can use in the best possible way to understand how to take care of themselves when they're wounded on the battleground. So there are a lot of applications that will where we will benefit from the presence of AI in terms of a speed and effectiveness of the diagnosis. And we are just at the beginning. We need to take also in consideration that right now, the computational power of the hardware that is being used for the large language models, for example, is doubling pretty much every 6 months. And so the rate of growth is like tremendous. And the industry has perceived the very deep changes that this technology can bring in our lives. It's only about, you know, like for everything, regulate things in the best possible way, in a way that can make things safe to be used, especially from the weaker, you know, classes, because that is the other thing. So, I couldn't be more in agreement than what you said. So definitely would be a very good way to complement or to supplement the current services provided by healthcare providers.
Just one example of that we use in the hospital frequently is a sepsis alert. Prior to the implementation of this sepsis alert into our EHR systems, millions of people were dying from sepsis because they would come into the ER and it would go unrecognized until it was too late. So now certain symptoms trigger an alert that says this patient has sepsis. But I believe someone said earlier, I believe it was you, Dave, about the waitresses, how it ends up causing more work. Unfortunately, there are triggers that may trigger that. You know, the patient may get up to go to the bathroom and their heart rate goes up and then it triggers a sepsis alert. We still have to go through all the steps, even though we know we're looking at the patient and they're not in a sepsis alert. So I just wanted to give an example of what you just said, how it can help, but then there is another side too where it can also hurt. I think we as a people have a lot to learn. As you just said, the rate at which this is being developed is doubling every 6 weeks. And that's my fear with healthcare being, you know, notoriously known for adopting technology slowly. are healthcare professionals ready for the speed at which this technology is being implemented? And I don't even know. I don't, my coworkers, we don't even, when I bring up AI, it's like a taboo word. So I'm just interested in like, how is the healthcare industry going to receive this, or how are they receiving it? Maybe others know and I don't. I think it's a lack of knowledge. I think what they hear and failure to do your own research, and it's always brought about in a way of, could this replace your job? You know, so I think that there's a certain amount of fear that prevents others from even trying to learn about it.
I can speak to this a little bit. Last year, I wrote a paper on AI and jobs, and, you know, really, number one, we tend to fear what we don't understand, and this is a problem that will likely be taken care of generationally. Now in the school system, AI is being taught and it's very comfortable. For example, I have an 8-year-old son who is doing some art projects, and I've taught him how to prompt. And when I was 8 years old, just to date myself, I was just learning how to use MS Paint, and that was all that we had. So, and that's really probably maybe more like 2 or 3 generations. Yeah, it's really funny. I'm old. But anyways, what I see as happening, number one, AI isn't going to eliminate all of the jobs. Largely, people who know how to use AI will be taking over, but there are new jobs that are actually being created, and those jobs need to exist so that we can utilize it to its maximum potential. There'll be jobs, and then there'll be jobs directly and indirectly associated with it. So again, you know, the short answer to the question is that it's going to take, you know, because of the acceleration of things, likely half a generation to a full generation to completely embrace it. But there are stepping stones along the way. And, you know, the famous saying is that necessity is the mother of invention. And when you do build a better mousetrap and you come with a better tool and somebody's, you know, life or livelihood is on the way. One thing that Giancarlo brought up that really is the driving force is the insurance industry. The financials and the insurance industries are so big that they're the market drivers. They're the leaders, and what they want, they will achieve, and it has to be sort of packaged up. And then you have, you know, you have lawmaking and litigation that sort of follows behind that. So it is a process. It's not going to be immediate. However, some things will sort of come to the forefront a little bit quicker. And what I'm really praying for is that through AI and blockchain and new technologies is that we get closer and closer to cures for things that have been in the past incurable, and most specifically cancers. I do feel, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek, and even though medicine is so far advanced in terms of the potential and what it could or should be, it is still somewhat barbaric, and we use low-tech solutions that, you know, Gianluca mentioned some of the, you know, the clones and the bad data and things like that. So I really think that this is the beginning of the end for that type of bad medicine, which is really exciting.
I simply think that, you know, likely AI and Web3, they came together. That is, I think, one very like coincidence, because one is essentially taking something out of the hands of people, and the other is giving something else back in the hands of people. You know, be able to see a photo and say that is a real photo rather than that is a deep fake. I think is a very important thing. And these are two complementary technologies that they offer, create a problem and offer a solution at the same time. Like a really lucky combination that happened in the past, you know, decade. And I say decade because maybe you don't know, but I'm also CEO of a surgical robotics company. And already before COVID, I was talking to people about the possibility to perform surgical procedure autonomously. And I know that sounds scary, but I make you reflect on something. When you are on a battleground, you know, you are a wounded soldier, would you prefer no care or would you prefer a surgical robot performing a procedure on you if there's no other option? So everything, it depends from circumstances. And anyway, there has to be always a starting point for every technology. You know, the nurse, you deploy the nurse and then the robot nurse, and then you find out that there are a lot of things that instead of solving is creating even more problems to the other people, to the other operators. And that's absolutely fair, you know. Let's not forget that the first computer, they needed, like, you know, punch cards, and they were literally a pain in the neck to program, you know. But look at what we have today. There is an history, and that is the shared effort, the shared contribution of everybody to develop a baby technology and bring it to fruition to become a solid, established technology. And this eventually will happen even with AI. I'm honestly not so sure that the AI will not be able to be a convincing, empathetic agent one day. And I think that everything that can be simulated can be eventually, re-engineered with different technologies, including the human brain. So it's only a matter of time. I don't know if we will be in the generation that will be able to see these things, or this will happen maybe down the road in 1-2 generations. But the only good thing is, the positive thinking is there is a new technology, it's coming, can bring some benefit, can bring some problems. Let's work not only on the technology and its applications, but also on the way to make sure that from that technology, we can extract the best possible value. And I think people have been pretty good in this so far. We don't have to forget that we live in a much better world than a few hundreds of years ago. For us, it's unbearable. When I used to hear the stories of my grandparents, I was like, oh my God, that was like ancient age. So yeah, we did a lot of disasters, we did a lot of things, but we're just like babies. We are learning from ourselves, and we don't have anyone indicating the way, and all we can do is experiment. And that's the only thing is that we need to get better in making things more human and protect ourselves a bit better. So luckily, like I said, this is the right combination, the right coincidence that two technologies like these came to fruition together at the same time. No, I actually was referring. So let's say this. The evolution is in steps. Obviously, the first step is the telerobotic, where there is someone on one end and the robot on the other end. That is already happening. It already happened more than a decade ago. I even did this with my robot, which is in this moment in front of me, behind my screen, where I had a surgeon in Milan, and I had, obviously, they were props, and we did a total knee replacement with the computer here in Boston. So these are very old things, I would say. What instead, it's coming, and if you Google my name, you might find like an interview that is on Channel 5 on YouTube, where I was telling, you know, there will be a moment where the surgeon, the robotic surgeon, will not even need someone on the other end, because we'll be that good, that will be even better than a human surgeon. And believe me, guys, that is the way it is. Like today, in machining a piece of metal, in doing a series of things, machines are better. You don't need a human being in the loop. You don't even need people to design anymore, because you can also have like software that can generate designs much more effectively than people. Taste is a different story. But we're going to get there. And we need to, you know, we need to love the technology we are building, because we are building it. And the only real challenge is to try to extract from each innovation the best possible value. Because ultimately, the goal is to try to make our life better. It's not only a better mousetrap. Of course, there is a business model behind, there is a business. But it's addressing a problem. Because, a mousetrap, to be effective, needs to address a problem, to make something better. We need to really analyze things to see how really better this technology is improving our life. But we'll get there. I tell you this because I do this kind of stuff, and I know where we are, and I know where we are going. And there's nothing sad about it. It is actually awesome that we will be able to have some technologies that can increase the precision of a surgeon of 100 times, that can extend the life of a surgeon of another 10 years, because can compensate tremor of their hands, or can predict some of the gesture. And that's one of the topics I've been doing research, surgical gesture analysis and prediction. So make a surgical procedure much easier for a surgeon, because the robot is capable of helping, and eventually one day to replace. There's nothing said about it. Someone will have to teach the robot anyway. There will be different type of jobs. There will be different type of challenges. But we are building on the shoulders of giants. That's what I like to say. Each generation has its own giants, its own Da Vinci, its own, Einstein. So, and we build on their shoulders. Every generation is building on the previous generation. And that is pretty much the message of the humankind, you know, pass along. Learn something new, pass along. Now, we need to have faith, and we need to take the time that's needed to mentor the newer generations. The newer generations are a very important thing for everybody. And if you are a little bit smart, you don't think only that life is about yourself, but life is really about the impact you can make. If you are an engineer, if you are a financial guy, if you are whatever you are, if you have the possibility to make an impact, that is a... sounds like a Marvel, you know, like the Avengers. It is a responsibility to do something. I mean, life cannot be about each one of us and that's it. It is the contribution of each one of us. Every little contribution. Every little life. And that is just going to make like a better world. So I like to think, and I like to teach to my students, to the people I work with, that the opportunities to do something better is the biggest gift you can get in your life, in your profession. So when you now discover blockchain, you discover AI, don't look at that as with fear. Oh, it's going to take my job. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. Look at that as a new opportunity to learn and to do something new.
I just want to say, Gianluca, I love your description of the relationship between blockchain and Web3. I think that it's no coincidence. I also think that it's no coincidence that they came about at the same time, and that just the way you describe it as one thing taking from something else and giving back, that's probably the best description that I've heard of that relationship. But to your question about where I've the future and technology and the reception of technology, I think that when it's explained, as you just explained it, John Lucas, is whatever your contribution to the world is right now, this is an open field. It's brand new. There's so much opportunity for all of us to bring our skill set, our experience, our passion, our fear. It's time for us to bring all of that to the drawing board and say, how can we use these technologies to create a better world for those behind us? To create a world where there is enough medicine, where, like right now, we're running out of certain medications in the hospital. Blockchain and AI could definitely fix that problem. So I really, really am inspired by this conversation, and I'm honored to be here among such great people in the industry.
Thank you very much. I want to share something very curious, but something very cute. So in proportion, obviously, there are more new Web3 developers every day than babies in the world. This is real statistics. Like, yeah, it is in percentage, you know, in percentage on the amount of existing population. That one number that was very curious to see, that there was essentially there were more people willing to become new Web3 developers every day than babies in the world. I can't answer.
I think it's the freedom. I think it's people are searching for freedom. Web3 developers, have you ever seen their data when they post a day in the life of a developer, not even just Web3, but most of them work remotely. They work if they do have to go in, they go into office buildings that are laced with the best snacks and gyms, and the work environment is very relaxed. And, you know, they work a lot and it's a very stressful job, but they're supported and they're paid well. As compared to, you look at residents coming out of med school, the complaints about the pay and the vigorous hours and the stress. At the end of the day, if I was a young person, surely I would, you know, that would be a no-brainer for me. I mean, that's just my take on it. I think that people are in search of freedom, a better quality of life, a better work-life balance. And those rigorous jobs that we used to do, like, without even thinking about it, even nursing, the World Health Organization has reported that more than 100,000 nurses are leaving the profession in the next 3 years. That's because people are not built the same anymore. No one wants to walk up and down hallways for 12 hours tending to people back hurting. I just don't foresee the younger generation doing the labor and the rigorous jobs that we've done in the past. Yeah, I was trying to collect myself before speaking. I'm a travel nurse, and during COVID, I traveled to New York in the height of COVID. And at that time, they were paying travel nurses like $10,000 a week, just being fully transparent, because I really want to say this out loud. They were paying us like $10,000 a week because we were endangering our lives when everyone else was at home. But I want to say that now, as a travel nurse, that has gone down to almost... they really want to pay now like $1,500 a week for an experienced nurse. And it's almost like a punishment because you all got paid so much during COVID. We risked so much during COVID. Like, we gave so much during COVID. And now it's like, oh, these nurses want to be paid so much. These nurses, we do what nobody else wants to do. Like, I don't understand why we have to petition for better pay when it's obvious that the hospital couldn't run without us. Like, so my position is bring the robots. And that's what I always say, bring the robots, because people are not going to continue doing these jobs under these conditions for this pay. So ultimately there'll be no choice but to get the robots, and I'm here for it.
I love your passion. Anyway, I think we are still a bit far from from getting to that point, but we will eventually at some point, and it would be just safer. We just need to understand that. But your experience, your life of experience, would be what is needed, you know, to train these systems. And if we find a better way to take care of patients that doesn't expose another person to get sick and die, I think that there's nothing bad about that. I used to mine radioactive material with normal people, and they were dying. You know, now they use automatic systems, and would be fool to go back with people. Again, life evolves. We will evolve, and we will change the way we do things, the way we perceive things. I'm not here to tell you it's going to be better, it's going to be worse. I'm just here to tell you my purely technical point of view and perspective, and try to see the good in the change. That's all. And try to embrace and make it better, rather than try to fight it. Eventually, there will be people that will still prefer to go to an old school nurse, just like today there is someone that prefer to go to a barber. And wants to go to an old school barber, and that's the beauty of life, is that we can do different things in different ways, and that's it. We just need to get used to it. As long as we make things that make sense and can bring positive value to everybody, it's fine. Also, another important thing. So I code a lot in my life, no? And today you go on ChatGPT or you go on any of these AI and you say, write me an algorithm, a piece of code that does A, B, and C, and it does in seconds. I should be pulling out my hair, because I said, oh my God, until yesterday I was being paid this much because I could do this on my own and was very well appreciated. Now you can do some of these things with ChatGPT. So will that diminish my job, my work, the quality of what I do? And the answer is no. That is enriching. It's giving me a boost in terms of what I can do. My product. Absolutely. No, but really allows you to focus on other details, which is empowering a lot of people. Like, let's say this, today to start a business in certain type of industries became much easier because you have better tools. So that means that the entry barrier for that new business now, it's not that high like before, because before they needed this much money to hire this many people, and it was really hard. When I started my first company, it was a very hard task. Today, there are kids that literally start businesses and all they do is use the right tools in the right way. But believe me, from the other end, this is empowering more people in the possibility to work on their own and understanding if they are more suited to be leader or to be creative or to be guided and work under pressure. I mean, everybody has a comfort zone. And if you have better tools that give you more choices, eventually you're going to end up doing the thing that where you can offer the best results for what your skills are. And my skills were obviously, I am pretty good in coding, but honestly, I think to be much better in designing architectures. And I can focus much more in designing an architecture and have a piece of code or, being generated automatically if it's needed. Likely there is still value. Probably in a couple more years, there will be better ways to design architecture of systems. And that means that I will be challenged and need to find something else new to do. But I look at these things like in a positive way. You know, it's just a challenge to keep me active, you know, to keep me competitive. It is always a change because that's the way it works. Today, technology is going faster and faster and faster. And you get a qualification and you find out that 10 years later, that qualification is not worth that much anymore or doesn't even make sense anymore. But that is giving you more freedom. Because now it means that even without that qualification, that title, you can do that job. And if there are more businesses that are can be created easily, you're going to have more services. You're going to have more ways to more effectively live your life with, let's say, with better finances or with less finances. And so there is always a double side for each thing that is happening. There is always like a positive side because obviously all the new technologies are coming always from the same root, which is addressing a problem. In every career, that is a must. Every. There are new technologies, new tools, new instruments, new practices, even for nurses. At some point in my life, I had to teach ophthalmologists to perform eyelid laceration suturing with new tools that we were working on. So, and I am an engineer. So again, but that's the way we should be. We should be competitive. That's the only way I know to excel and to offer the best possible service for your patient, for your client, for your student, is to be competitive in your job. As long as that competitivity is coming from a very good root, which is not being better than your fellow, professional, but it is because you want to be good in what you're doing. And then that actually makes your job more interesting if you have to wait, to learn how to use new tools and how to be up to date. Because otherwise, I think at some point it's becoming even boring, even not that nice to do something where you have to do always the same things and there is no way to improve yourself, your position, your learning. Well, one thing we are doing is building tools. We are building tools to empower people, developers, company, businesses to build better applications. So we are really looking at how can we better leverage different technologies to offer more comprehensive development environments so that they can build new type of applications. Because if you look at Web3 today, blockchains, all the applications are always the same. 90% are all around cryptocurrencies and tokenization. And we are trying to offer new tools to build still on the Web3, but to offer different type of services. I think the ultimate goal of Web3 is enterprises and the services that can offer or that for enterprises or that enterprises can offer to their customers through the Web3 technology. But you need really to package very good tools that can support and boost the creative process. Here we have one more person that has been thinking at the same things I've been thinking, obviously. And that is a great thing, but that is just the beginning. Now you have this idea. You have the ZKP, the zero knowledge proof. You have the blockchain. What else do you need to build these kind of applications? What else? And he decided to pick one specific ledger. Why that? Why not another one? What is that the other one are lacking of? Those are the questions I've been asking myself. At the beginning, I was actually looking for a data auditing technology to use for healthcare. And I looked at the other blockchains, and then I am an expert in high performance computing. And then I said, oh, wow, certain things could be done in a different way and eventually better and make things more optimized for this kind of industry. Obviously, our blockchain can be used for GameFi, for DeFi, for any other sort of application. It's a layer one, can be used for anything. But if I have something that is optimized for the healthcare industry, in matter of fact, will be eventually consecrated the blockchain for the healthcare, I'm totally fine. That I know that I'm creating an impact. And the impact can be direct or can be indirect. Can be direct if I build some application. Can be indirect if I give tools to other people that are thinking at solutions and they're in need of those tools to be able to build better mousetraps, let's say like this. So I want to empower these people. And most importantly, another mission that we have is to offer grants to support technologies in this space that are not only looking at numbers, but are looking at impact. And the impact is improving quality of life, not only looking at the a profitability of a new technology, a new healthcare technology. That doesn't mean that should be non-profitable, but if I have to look only at the first 10 profitable thing and disregard the rest of the technologies on the marketplace, I am definitely not working well. So there is the need of someone that is also looking at those very challenging problems and very particular technologies that they need a little bit more support, especially in the early stage.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And Gianluca, thank you for just what you're building and the opportunities that it will allow for in the world. Just to tell you all a little bit about NurseBlock, what we're building is a blockchain-backed, basically home healthcare agency where it allows for peer-to-peer payment for the nurses. So the nurses, it will allow for credential management for the nurses. The nurses will upload their experience, all of these in a sense of sort of like the NFT in a wallet kind of, and then the patient will have access to look at the different nurses on our platform and see the nurse based on availability, the need that they have, and the nurse's skill level, what they want. So it matches them and the nurses, like almost like a Uber for nurses. So that's what we're building. Gianluca, I really would like to talk more about that with you in the future. And I just wanted to say thank you for giving me hope. When I started to see the post from Circular and what you were doing, it made me so excited because I was like, this could really work. The tools are being built and they will exist. And in the future, those nurses that may not want to work in the hospital may find that there's a neighbor around the corner that needs their skill set, that they can benefit that patient in that way. So that's what we're building at NurseBlock. We're very excited, super early. Please, if you have insight, join our Telegram. We want to build in public and we want everyone to be a part of what we're building. So thank you for that opportunity. I really appreciate it.
And we love people like you. You're welcome to reach out and see if there is anything we can do to help you. But what we're doing is essentially for people like you that want to build the stuff you're building.
Thank you. I will be in touch for sure. Thank you so much. thank you for having me. When I saw the opportunity, I was so excited, and I'm so grateful. This has been more beneficial and inspiring than I imagined. So I'm just very grateful for the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm still here. At your disposal for any help I can give, and at disposal of anyone else that wishes to reach out.
I just wanted to say, when we were talking about learning in our different industries, I think that learning and continual learning is the key to life. And the more with each other, I think the more we'll find that we're more alike than we are different. And so I just want to encourage everyone to try as much as you can to learn as much as you can about the people around you. I'm very, very grateful for this opportunity, and I look forward to having more conversations like this. Thank you.
I just want to thank you, Ms. Hales, you and Duncan and Treasury, and now Hans, for the service you provide to the community, which is invaluable. I view it as my launch pad. And now, you know, through the connection with the ambassadors, we've been able to find a home for Ellis's talents and abilities. And I think that you all make a natural pairing. There are some other people that I kind of have in mind, but it's very much a, you know, it takes a certain amount of bravery and, you know, putting yourself out there. Unfortunately, Ellis was really able to. I want to thank your guests for what they do in their both their respective sectors. I really hope that Gianluca and I can foster a conversation. I do believe that what we're building and the technologies we plan on using really pair with what he's doing at the signature level. which, you know, in terms of medical, the authorizations are all done at the signature level, and you can create workflows based on that. So I really hope that Gianluca, you find some value in that. I'd love to foster a conversation. Our nurse, oh my gosh, I have such a big place in my heart for you, so I just want to give you encouragement. My space, yeah, it's a little bit different than what we're talking about. I have Panos Mek from Anados Finance, who Treasury is well aware of, as he's written courses for Treasury Academy. The purpose of tomorrow's discussion is to dive into AMM and DeFi on the XRPL ledger, which is something that can actually help everybody. So if anybody is thinking about diving into that and putting your money up, you know, this is where you do your own research, and we're formatting it all in one place. So, Ms. Hales, I really appreciate you bringing me up. I heard Gianluca speaking, and I really got excited about his corner of the market and what he's doing and what he brings to the table. And it really aligns well with what I want to do. So just thank you. Thank you to the people who have stuck it out. This has been an amazing space. And you mentioned, I'll wrap up with this. You mentioned the magic that happens, and I see it consistently in this space, because you bring in a variety of perspectives and the diversity where you have someone working, in this case, on both ends of healthcare, on you know, pushing the technology on one end and then the hands-on on the other. And when you pair entities like this together that can recognize the value of each other, that's what really drives it. So again, you guys just always raise the bar so high, and I appreciate you letting me come up. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye. I'm glad you reminded me that Duncan wasn't here, because did we miss? Yeah, of course we missed him.